Welcome to The Crucible, where the Southern African Institute of Mining and Metallurgy gives you a front row seat to conversations with specialists in the minerals and metals sector. SIAM has well over 100 years' experience in and commitment to protecting the professional standards of our industry. Join us now as we discuss the key issues and global initiatives to give you the relevant information needed to make informed decisions, to influence policy that directly affects our sector, and to help our industry grow in an uncertain future.
Welcome to The Crucible, the podcast where we explore the evolving landscape of the mining industry, from economic impacts and now to social responsibility. I am Kabelo Ratube, and today we're tackling a crucial topic, the social license to operate in South Africa's mining sector. Joining me is a leading voice in the space, Mr. Alex Khumalo, Head of Social Performance at the Minerals Council of South Africa. With extensive experience in community engagement, including his tenure as Community Engagement Manager at Anglo Platinum, Mr. Khumalo brings invaluable insights into the complexities of social licensing in the mining industry. Mr. Khumalo, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kabelo.
Now we're going to start with the basics. So let's go and talk a little bit about social license to operate in mining. What exactly do we mean by this, and why is it important in South Africa today?
So maybe I just need to start by clearing some fog around this concept of social license to operate. In the South African context, we tend to confuse the social license to operate with the legal license to operate, for the simple reason that as part of the granting of a mining right, a mining operation or a mining company needs to also ensure that they have what they call a social and labor plan, which is basically the community responsibility that is now attached to the rights to mine. So each and every mining operation will have to ensure that they've got that social and labor plan as part of their legal license to operate. Now, that is legislated. Surely a social license to operate cannot be legislated. So what is the social license to operate? In my view, and I think this is something that we need to socialize amongst all mining operations and communities and regulators, is that the social license to operate is a result of the performance of a mining operation in terms of their legal obligations to perform under the commitments that they've made in their social and labor plan. That is, the impacts that they actually make on those communities. We have seen the regulators in many mining jurisdictions giving mining companies a tick in terms of their performance when it comes to the implementation of their social and labor plans. That is, in terms of the regulations, in terms of what the expectations are from a regulator's perspective, those mines generally perform well and they get a tick. So, how do you get a tick? You commit to build a school. You commit to build a clinic. You commit to build a road. And at the end of the 5-year period, and you have indeed funded and executed those projects or programs, you then get a tick from the DMRE, which is now actually the DMPR, and you have performed in terms of ensuring that you retain your legal license to operate, so your mining right. But you still find that, you know, in the communities where you operate, so your host communities, they still don't like you as a mining operation. They're not your friends. They protest all the time. They complain about you not employing enough of them. They complain about opportunities not being provided to the locals. Sometimes they blockade your mining operation. Sometimes they set your vehicles on fire that are transporting your product. And you sit back and you say, but I have performed well according to the regulator. I've ticked all of the boxes. I am fully compliant with the requirements of my mining right. So what's the challenge? The challenge is that in the eyes of the communities and perhaps in the lived experiences of the communities, whatever it is that you have implemented as part of your obligations, in as far as your legal license to operate is concerned, so your mining right, the communities aren't necessarily convinced that they are benefiting directly. And one of the reasons for that is that in pretty much all of the mining jurisdictions, triple challenges that we face across the entire country, unemployment, poverty, and inequality, they continue to prevail. You go to a mining town such as Emalahleni, and you've got youth unemployment of 50%. Emalahleni hosts the energy cluster in South Africa, so coal mines together with Eskom power stations. And yet you've got 50% youth unemployment. Those youth are not going to grant you the social license to operate simply because they remain unemployed. In as much as a mining company has got a defined carrying capacity when it comes to the number of employees that that it can employ, the expectations are otherwise. So those communities then withhold the social license to operate.
Thank you very much for that insight. And now I want you to take us a little bit into why would you say then it's important for South African mining companies to obtain or secure a social license to operate today?
The role that mining plays in South Africa has got its roots. It's got historical roots. You will recall that the city of Johannesburg, the city of gold, well, the gold is gone now, is what actually was used to build the country. You have a Johannesburg, but a lot of the other provinces benefited from that because of migrant labor and so on. So mining still has got a very important role to play. There's also the emotive side of mining in terms of the ownership of the resources that are under the ground. So if you go to a rural community, what you would often encounter is a scenario where surface rights belong to, it could be a traditional authority, it could be a community that lives on that land, and yet the rights to resources are under the ambit of the DMRE, now the Department of Mineral and Petroleum Resources, the MPR. So you have to obtain access, one, from the communities that are sitting on the land, and two, from the regulator who regulates the and controls those minerals on behalf of the nation. There is unfortunately the misconception that mineral resources belong to host communities or to communities that own the surface rights. The law doesn't say that anymore. The law is very clear around the fact that mineral resources belong to all South Africans. And the Department of Mineral and Petroleum Resources is a custodian of those resources on behalf of the entire nation. That being the case, you'll find then that you need to go that extra mile to ensure that communities not only understand that, but they see a true benefit from you coming in, and often a mining company would be an outsider. You coming in as a mining company to come and extract these resources. And that extraction is seen from very different angles and lenses, or through different lenses by communities. Some of them actually call it theft. Some of them believe that, you know, they are not fully benefiting from resources that belong to them. And as I've just said, mineral resources in South Africa by law belong to the entire nation. So as a mining company coming in, you do need to ensure that you acquire that social license to operate. And you only acquire that by ensuring that tangible benefits accrue to those communities around your mining operation. You'll remember that things like royalties go to the national fiscus, they go to treasury. They don't necessarily return in the same quantum to those communities. So often communities feel that they're being shortchanged in terms of, you know, the benefits that accrue from the resources beneath their feet, so to speak. So as a mining company, then you need to ensure that you demonstrate those tangible resources. As I was saying earlier, simply building a school might not earn you that social license to operate. So you need to go that extra mile, work with the communities to ensure that they do feel tangible benefits from your existence in their space.
That is very insightful. You bring in the perspective of some of the obstacles that companies face as you were talking. I heard mainly when you referred to how perhaps local communities would have the view that they are not actually seeing any tangible benefits. And of course, this could be an obstacle that the mining companies are then faced with. But you also bring into the conversation the point of economic benefits. And of course, mining contributes about 8 to 10% to South Africa's GDP, and it supports nearly 500,000 jobs. But now, how do companies then try and strike that balance between profitability and also community engagement, or rather addressing the concerns of the social license to operate, the people who actually grant the social license to operate? How do companies strike this balance?
The easiest and perhaps most difficult way of striking that balance is to ensure that you go beyond the compliance mode. So you go beyond compliance. In as much as in terms of the commitments that you make while applying for a mining right, so those that are in the social and labor plan, you also need to address some of the other challenges that communities around the operation face. That is going that extra mile. But also, what is important is that no single entity, no single mining operation can effectively deal with all of the challenges that are faced by host communities. It is therefore important for the mining company to consider itself a catalyst for development rather than the sole entity that is there to resolve or solve the challenges that communities are facing. As a mining company, you need to work with municipalities, which, by the way, are responsible for local economic development, constitutionally or legally speaking. You also need to ensure that you collaborate with other players in the sector. A lot of mining companies tend to work in silos because if the social and labor plan that I have is tied to my mining right, then I'm going to make sure that I execute it. And if I need to collaborate with somebody else, and maybe there could be delays in terms of, you know, resources coming through or planning, then I would rather just go it alone because that will secure my legal license to operate. But then the shortfall manifests itself in terms of the social license to operate. So collaboration is a space that is not familiar to us. A few companies have done it and they've done it well. Communities have seen greater benefits. So for me, mining companies need to be leaders in the collaboration space. They need to be catalysts for change, so catalysts for development, and ensure that, you know, they create, you know, the snowball effect that begins to grow. Mining companies also, because of the nature of the business, all mining operations come to an end at some point. So we are passing visitors in these communities. We need to ensure that when mine closure comes, there is a diversified economy around our mines. That we haven't been able to achieve. Hence the challenges with Welkom, Kimberley. In the case of Welkom, it was a coal mining town. It still is, but not to the same extent. Kimberley, diamond mining town. There was very, very little economic diversification while mining operations were in existence in those two towns. And what has happened? When mines close, you begin to see the towns go into a tailspin. They begin to decline. And those economies begin to die. Qualified engineers move out, go find opportunities elsewhere. So it is important that as a mining company, we facilitate, we become a catalyst for this economic diversification. We don't have to do it ourselves, but we need to ensure that because we know that we are there for a defined period in our planning and in our catalytic role, we need to ensure that there is that economic diversification. That is going that extra mile and ensuring that your social license to operate remains intact even after you have left the particular town. If you go to mining towns that or former mining towns, very, very few people will speak kindly of the mining company that used to operate there. And that is simply because they feel that, you know, the rug was pulled from underneath their feet by that particular company. But the real reason is that there wasn't any economic diversification during the time that that mining company was in operation. So you've got to, all in all, you've got to go beyond the compliance mode and go into this mindset that says, how do I become a catalyst for development? Remember also that, you know, in terms of, you know, if you look at your chemistry, your catalyst doesn't do all of the work. All it does is begins a process, and that process gains its own momentum. And that's exactly what mining companies should see themselves as.
That's a very important view that you bring across there. And my next question was actually going to be about best practices that mining companies can adopt to strengthen their relationships with local communities. And from what you're saying, what I understand is that they need to find ways to ensure or show the local communities that they are, show they have the best interests for local development. They are finding ways to ensure that the local community is not just reliant on the mining operation itself. And one could even draw connection between what you're talking about in terms of how once the mining operations close, then local communities are left in destitute because there aren't any jobs related to the industry anymore. And one might even say that's why we have issues of increased illegal mining per se. So given the recent discussion on legal mining activities and community protests in mining regions or regions that were in the past known for mining, how should companies navigate these pressing challenges?
I don't want to quote our minister in terms of, you know, whose clients illegal miners are. But I think what is important is, you know, we need to understand the context within which illegal mining takes place. And it's all about economic opportunity. It is all about ensuring that communities are sustainable. So sustainability is a key factor. And how do you ensure that? You go back to saying this mine, and generally we've got a very good idea of how long a particular resource would last. So if it's 20 years, if it's 30 years, in the planning, not just by the mine itself, alone, but with the municipalities, district municipalities, maybe even the province, within which that mining operation is located, we begin to say, we know that this resource will last for this defined period. How do we as a collective ensure that when that mining operation ceases to operate, there will be economic opportunities that exist? So that's the one element. The second element is the one of law enforcement. Without effective policing and law enforcement, you are going to find a lot of unscrupulous humans out there who will seize these opportunities to conduct illegal activities such as illegal mining. So it is important that, you know, all of the cogs of an economic system are in place. You can't have a successful economy growing when legality is not woven into that fabric. You need to ensure that everything is in place. But also, education must improve. So services that are delivered to communities must improve. Everyone must play their part so that at the end of the life of mine, people can actually move away from mining and go and embark on other economic activities. So illegal mining is a different, difficult space. And with upwards of 40% unemployment in South Africa, using the extended definition of unemployment, it stands to reason that poverty levels are high. And with poverty comes desperation. With desperation comes I will do anything to put food on the table. So it is important that, you know, we look at finding solutions to challenges such as illegal mining in a comprehensive and inclusive manner. It is not just about lawbreakers. It is a societal challenge. It's a economic challenge. And it is actually an existential challenge for communities.
Of course. And you say something important by saying that everybody has a role to play. And now the burning question is, what is the role of government and governmental policies in shaping the mining industry? There's a shift in different international legislation that is targeted, for example, on human rights and environmental due diligence. And these frameworks, although international, are to some extent going to affect how the mining industry in South Africa operates on issues of community engagement as it pertains to mining operations. But how do you then see these recent policy shifts impacting social licensing and community engagement efforts in South Africa?
So in the South African context, what we really ask of government is to ensure that the prevailing environment is conducive to a thriving mining sector. It's one sentence, but it's a big ask. And if the environment is conducive, the industry will take care of itself, so to speak. You know, they will invest from the returns from there. There'll be reinvestments in communities and so on. There will be a requirement for legislation, frameworks that actually help guide the industry in how they operate. So, for instance, in health and safety in South Africa, Mine Health and Safety Act, that has helped us move from very high numbers of fatalities in the mining sector to, I think in 2024, we were sitting somewhere in the mid-40s. It is an improvement, but there's still more than 40 lives that we lost last year. There's 40 odd lives too many. And I think the same applies to communities. Create an environment that allows mining companies to operate, to work with communities in terms of development, to work with other parties to ensure that they collaborate and deliver benefits to communities, and hopefully those communities would in return grant those mining operations that crucial social license to operate. This cannot be done single-handedly. In fact, the frameworks that come out of government, they need to be not negotiated, but they need to be crafted. They need to be co-created with the industry as well, because you can't regulate from afar. You need to be able to say, having engaged communities, the non-governmental sector, the local government sector, and the mining industry, this is a framework that is best suited to deliver the kind of development that we are looking for in communities that host mining operations. So it is, I always say, Kabelo, that, and I'm not saying people should eat elephants, but I always say that, you know, to eat an elephant under the hot African sun, you don't do it one bite at a time, but you do it in large numbers. And I think if you look at the challenges that our communities face, the communities from whom we are asking for a social license to operate, the best way to deal with the challenges that are being faced by those communities is to do this as a collective. Do it together, pull together, and I am sure that we will achieve much, much better social outcomes.
Absolutely. I found it quite interesting, the saying that, the elephant saying, and just it brings into focus just how important collective action is in order to secure a social license to operate. But now, looking forward, you've already segued into this, but what should mining companies prioritize moving forward to ensure that they continue to earn or even sustain the social license to operate?
This might sound a little bit controversial, But in the last 20 years of implementing social and labor plans under the MPRDA, we still have a situation where host communities remain impoverished. Sure, they've got better access to education. They've got improved access to healthcare. Some communities have got better infrastructure in terms of roads. And yet, levels of unemployment have gone up. Inequality has gone up. And if you look at the Gini coefficient, mine host communities don't do that well. So what are we missing? And this is where the controversy comes. I think in a lot of the mine host communities, mining companies have displaced government, where government no longer builds schools, but they look at mining companies to provide, you know, the buildings. Or they don't build clinics, they look at mining companies to do just that. I think that mining companies need to focus in something that they're actually quite good at, and that's economic activity. We are economic players. We do social development as I said earlier, as part of compliance. But I think we can play a much better role in catalyzing economic development in the areas where we operate. So how, as mining companies, do we diversify the economy of a local municipality? Who do we need to work with? So collaboration. Which buttons do we need to press to get this local economy going? Sure, I mean, you need an educated populace. You need the youth to be educated. But I believe that that's where government should continue playing a part, providing education, healthcare, and mining companies need to work with like-minded entities in the private sector and the public sector to ensure that economic opportunities outside of the mining value chain are created. Sure, you could use the mining value chain to create such opportunities. But remember, again, with a defined life of mine, you want to make sure that economic opportunities are created that will last beyond the life of mine. So I think that, you know, going forward, mining companies need to focus on the day-to-day challenges. You still have children that go to the schools that the mining industry built on empty stomachs. Something's wrong with that picture. That's because parents are not employed. So there's no food on the table. And yet, you know, there's a nice school that the kids can go to. No education is going to take place in that school. Children are not going to be able to effectively learn on empty stomachs. So I think, you know, as in mining industry, we need to pivot and be brave, you know, to face our regulators and government and say, you need to pick up your end of this bargain. We will pick up on the economic side of things. It will be difficult. It will be a difficult conversation. But I think it is time that we had it. And I think the outcomes from that will be much, much better.
Well, there you have it. Collaboration, diversifying the economic situation of local mining communities. Those are the words of Mr. Alex Khumalo. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise and your insights with us today.
Thank you, Kabel.
And that's a wrap on today's episode of The Crucible. If you enjoyed this discussion, don't forget to tune in to our next episode and share this episode with your network. Until next time, goodbye.
Thank you for listening. Please note that the facts and opinions expressed are those of the individual and do not reflect the position of SIAM or the corporate institution.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.